This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm Justin Dunk, joined by John Hodge and JC Abbott. Good to be back with you, boys. You kept it going, though. Last week's episode was strong. I'll give you credit.
Appreciate it.
We missed you, Dunk.
We did.
We missed you.
Nah, that's debatable. A lot of people do.
When you're not on the show, the average weight of our panel here almost doubles. So we appreciate you bringing down the average.
Also, the average volume drops, so
also that
there is a trade-off.
Yeah, sorry for everybody's eardrums, but you guys kept it rolling. Appreciate you, boys. We got a full show, so let's get her going. Today, we're discussing Bo Levi Mitchell's much-anticipated return to Calgary.
New uniforms for the Rough Riders and Red Blacks.
The Jonas Brothers selected for this year's Grey Cup halftime show.
Upgrades to Commonwealth Stadium, and can you guys imagine this? McMahon Stadium?
And our picks straight up and against the spread for week one of the CFL regular season. But first,
the lawsuit filed by the Toronto Argonauts' former strength and conditioning coach against the team and franchise quarterback Chad Kelly has been settled out of court. What does this mean for the parties involved?
Really concisely and simply that it's been resolved to the satisfaction of all parties. Three Down Nation reached out to one of the plaintiff's lawyers, Andrew Monkhouse, who declined to comment on any of the details surrounding the settlement. So as far as the lawsuit goes from the Toronto Argonauts perspective, Chad Kelly's and the plaintiff's, this has been filed and is done.
I don't think we're going to engage in any speculation about this topic. I'm sure people want more information about what the settlement holds and that type of thing. It would be irresponsible for us to speculate about any of that. And so we're going to move forward with the show. But we will promise to our listeners, our viewers, our readers that if any information does come out about the settlement, about Chad Kelly's future, we will report that on our website. TSN released its top 50 CFL players list on Tuesday night, with Zach Collaros taking the number one spot for the third straight year. Yes, it is Collaros. Get out of here with the Collaros. It's not Collaros.
Set him straight, Hodge.
It's Collaros. And by the way, shout out to Derek Taylor. Winnipeg's new starting receiver is Ontario Wilson, not Ontario Wilson. I hope we get that right, too. But we also got people out here saying Orlando Steinhauer after he's been in the league for 30 years. So I won't hold my breath. Was Collaros the right choice, JC?
I believe he was. Now, I've seen some criticism of this online. I've also seen some people flabbergasted, cough, cough, Justin Dunk, and how he didn't win MOP last year, but he can be somehow the number one guy on the CFL's top 50. Look, there's not necessarily a perfect criteria for how you're supposed to vote for this list. Everyone is given a little bit of free rein. But for me, I take into account the last couple of seasons, not just last year, and project it into how this guy is going to look going forward. I think if you take the sample size of the last four seasons in the league, Collaros looks or has been the undisputed top quarterback over that span. The top quarterback should always be the top player in the league because he is the most valuable player in the league. He makes the difference for his franchise. Now, I do think quarterbacks are overvalued slightly on this list. If you get into the nitty-gritty, some of the guys like a Cody Fajardo and a Cloud Bethel-Thompson probably didn't deserve to be included on a top 50, but Kolaros is a different story. He is the guy. He has made the Winnipeg Blue Bombers what they are, and he is absolutely a deserving number one.
Hodge, how do you say it again? Kolaros?
Kolaros.
Kolaros.
I'm saying it right, right? Kolaros?
There's a couple Kolaros.
JC Abut, you said it wrong.
Did I get it right or JC got it right?
You confused me, Hodge.
Kolaros.
I said Kolaros.
Okay, that one was better. That one was better.
They sound the same to me.
Well, I'm the one who edits the show, so I will listen back in an hour or so when we're done. And,
I'm not good with names, guys. We know this.
We know this, CJ. We know this.
Yes. I just want to make sure I'm getting it right. Kolaros.
That's
was
correct.
Definitely the correct choice. Hopefully I'm saying his last name right. For the number one spot on this list, you know, I've been on the podcast on multiple occasions, and as you noted, JC on social media saying he should have been the three-time reigning MOP of this league. Alas, that's not going to change, but I just want some people to make it make sense, right? You have a lot of the media voting on this list. I believe the two of you had votes for the top 50. The reason that I don't do it is I just struggle with rankings. Hodge knows this very well from free agency to the draft, anything else. It's just something that takes me way too much time, so I've stopped doing it. So full respect to people for actually ranking. And, you know, it's probably unfair for me to critique some of the rankings without actually voting, but there are some ones here that are alarming to me. And JC noted one of them. McLeod Bethel-Thompson didn't even play in the league last year. Trevor Harris, with all due respect, started a handful of games for the Saskatchewan Roughriders and is on this list. So I think it's more of a name recognition, name value, more familiar name list might be the better way to put it. And if this was, let's say, a top 50 player ranking by individuals in the league who do this for a living in terms of the scouting departments, that's something that I would like to see be a component of this going forward, is you can't rank your own players, but rank the top 40 or 50 players around the league that play for other teams. Put that together and have it have some weight, excuse me, in this list. I think that would say a lot. Also, include the players' rankings in this formula as well, because there is no bigger respect than a player respecting another player for how great that they are. I think that could help out this list. It's never going to be perfect. Part of the reason that this list is so great is because you can have debates about guys being higher or lower, or who should be on the list or who shouldn't be on the list. But overall, I think having Zach Kolaros as the number one rated player is absolutely the correct decision. He's the gold standard of quarterbacking in this era in the CFL.
I did fill out a ballot. JC also filled out a ballot. For those, and also I should say Ben Grant and Ryan Ballantyne, both of whom contribute for Three Down Nation, also filled out ballots. I believe between the four of us, we accounted for about 10% of the overall voting. There were around 40 ballots distributed by TSN to various members of the media. The only criteria that we're given before voting is you are expected to select a minimum number of certain positions. There's five offensive linemen you need to include, four defensive linemen, defensive backs and linebackers, at least three running backs, two receivers, and then at least one quarterback and one kicker. The other note is guys have to be on a current CFL roster, so any free agents or guys in the NFL obviously can't count. And you're only given 40 slots. So the final roster is 50, but the ballots are only 40. Now, some guys who made my ballot that did not make the CFL's list or the list from TSN, I had Peter Nicastro, guard center for the Toronto Argonauts at 23. I think he's excellent. I also had James Vodders at 25. Yes, he got hurt, but I thought he was dominant last year for the Calgary Stampeders coming off the edge. when he was healthy. I also had Stavros Katsantonis of the Hamilton Tiger Cats at 33. Marc-Antoine Dacroix, I had him on my list. I didn't have him as high as he ended up being on TSN's list at 11. I thought that was too high for Dacroix. I do think he deserved to be the top-ranked safety, but I don't think he is leaps and bounds better than Stavros Katsantonis. I think that they are very close. By the way, Katsantonis, Greek last name, ends with is, just like Zach Kolaris, another Greek last name. Katsantonis, Kolaris, let's go. I'm not Greek, but I'm a big fan of their food. So some things that I don't like about this list. JC touched on it a little bit. I'm going to rip the list for this. I hate that every starting quarterback, it seems, is on this list every year, unless they came off a really bad year.
Like, not this year, though. Man.
There's six out of nine. Six is still too many, in my opinion. I don't like it when mediocre starting quarterbacks or middling starting quarterbacks are listed alongside like dominant defensive linemen. And I know that you could say, well, but like positional value, you know, you'd much rather have the quarterback. Okay, fair enough. But there's nothing in the criteria about positional value. I suppose it's open to interpretation. But to me, I try to rank these players as true talents, not by positional value. Cody Fajardo at 19 is a complete joke, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And I want to preface this by saying that Fajardo deserved wholeheartedly to be the Grey Cup MVP. He had a sensational game, was a worthy champion in the 110th Grey Cup in Hamilton. With that being said, we're talking about a guy who threw 14 touchdown passes last season in 16 starts. Cody Fajardo has never thrown for more than 18 touchdown passes in a season. And back in 2019, when he was a legit MOP candidate with the Riders, he at least rushed for 611 yards and 10 touchdowns that season. He was dominant on the ground. Last year in Montreal, he ran for 341 yards and 3 touchdowns. Like, this is a guy who combined rushing and passing had 17 touchdowns, and yet he is the 19th best player in the CFL. I'm sorry, this is not a Grey Cup list. This is a overall players list. And having one great game should not get you into the top 20. That was the pick that most stood out to me. I do also want to run down, and this is all in our reporting at Three Down Nation, the guys who were on the list last year who fell off. There was a ton of them, but some of them were ranked really high last year. Kadeem Carey was number 3. On last year's list.
That was wild.
Fell all the way off. Lorenzo Maldon, the 4th, was 7th. Fell all the way off the list. Dominic Rhymes, receiver, formerly the BC Lions, now with Ottawa, was 11th. William Standback was 14th. Bo Levi Mitchell was 20th. So a lot of guys falling off. And that is a reminder, by the way, every year there's some top dogs who hit a wall, fall off the list. Presumably that means somebody's going to fall off the list this year. I'm interested to see which of the top players hits a wall in 2024. I'm not rooting for it, but it's inevitably going to happen.
Yeah, there were some big names that remained on the list that I thought were either wildly undervalued or wildly overvalued. And to me, the one that jumps off in particular is Anthony Lanier II of the Saskatchewan Roughriders. If you look at the analytics and the PFF numbers, as good at generating pressure as anybody in the league, I had him in the top tier of defensive linemen in my top 10 alongside the likes of Filarang Aromolare and Jake Ceresna. He's at 49 on this list. Clearly, there wasn't a lot of love for guys who played in Saskatchewan last year. But also, you look at a couple of Montreal Alouettes and Reggie Stubblefield and Mustafa Johnson. Yes, new guys just coming onto the scene, but who were as good as anybody in the league last year. I would argue absolutely top 20 players, and they're at 49 and 40, or not 49, 43 and 40 respectively. That is way too low for those two players in my mind as well. And then up in the top 10, Willie Jefferson is still hanging on up there in that top 10. He's a fabulous player. He was on my ballot, don't get me wrong, but I didn't have him in my top 10 anymore. those guys I thought were in the wrong spaces. And there's a number of other names that you could point to on this list. I know the other one that a lot of people have commented on social media, and we touched on him off the top of the show, is how you rank Chad Kelly, right? He comes in at number 5 on this list. Voters were given specific instructions to base this exclusively on talent, or how they would rank this list based on the way that players perform on the field. That didn't change how I would rank him. He was not in the 5 spot for me. He was not in my top 10. I didn't see him as that type of player. But I know there was a bunch of debate among our contributors as to where they would rank him. I wonder where you guys think the appropriate spot was for Chad Kelly.
Kelly's a real difficult one. I think 5 is too high. I really do believe that that offensive line in Toronto is far and away at this point the best in the league, especially with Jamarcus Hardrick going to the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, and that Chad Kelly's play was elevated because of it. And I think we'll see some of that proof with Cameron Dukes coming out and playing better than some people are going to expect. Is Chad Kelly a great talent? Yes. But, you know, I don't think he's quite there with some of the other names on this list from just a pure talent perspective. And JC, you know, before we get to Hodge on Chad Kelly, I got to ask you, are you okay with a running back, Brady Oliveira, being at number 2?
Look, it's a little bit higher than where I ranked Brady, I'll be honest with you, but he was a top 10 player for me. Again, this is a list that's supposed to be based on talent. We want to do a strict value list, then I'm bumping the running backs down to the bottom. I'm ranking them at 38 through 40 on my ballot, but that's not the list we have. It's a talent-based
ballot. Just so I have you right, you're saying that there is a talent difference from running back to running back.
I've never disputed that fact.
Okay.
Does that talent difference equate necessarily to victories? I think in most cases it does not.
Because as we all know, the teams in the Grey Cup last year and who won the most games last year all had terrible running backs. No good.
One of them let their running back walk in free agency for nothing to replace him with a guy who's, you know, barely started. So,
yeah, I mean,
they clearly think he's replaceable.
Or they just had 30 different players who were due raises and couldn't make it work.
And
they also had half their
and the least valuable one that they didn't want to pay was the running back. There we go.
I think you are
say it with me.
I think you are grossly speculating there. But I will say, for me, I did not have Zach Kolaris in my top 5, and I don't think that's
what.
I did not have him in my top 5. He was my highest ranked quarterback, but again, I think quarterbacks are overvalued on this list. I had Brady Oliveira at 1 because I thought he was sensational game in, game out, and he can contribute in the most ways possible. He is an elite pass blocker. He is fantastic catching passes out of the backfield, producing in space, but he can also put his head down and make plays between the tackles. He is a nightmare to cover, and he is ultra consistent on a game-to-game basis. That being said, getting to Chad, I had him as my 3rd quarterback. I had him at 39. He barely cracked my list, and that was the reason that a dunk kind of got into was I think his supporting cast is elite, especially last year. I thought I agree he has the best offensive line in the CFL, and I don't think it's particularly close. I think he's got an excellent receiving core. I think he had maybe the only running back who was even better at pass blocking than Brady Oliveira last season, and AJ Ouellette. And when you've got that paired with a future Hall of Famer and Andrew Harris, who, you know, is maybe the best in CFL history at catching passes out of the backfield, You've got a winning combination. I'm not taking anything away from Chad Kelly. His success on the field was noted. Obviously, the Argonauts felt he was worth paying a boatload of money. But I also think when you look at the history of Ryan Dinwiddie and what he's been able to do with quarterbacks, we talked about it on the show last week with Nick Arbuckle. Nick Arbuckle looked good in Ryan Dinwiddie's system in 2019. But Levi Mitchell, the last time he looked good, he was playing in Ryan Dinwiddie's system. McLeod Bethel-Thompson led the CFL in passing yards in Ryan Dinwiddie's system. McLeod Bethel-Thompson led the CFL in touchdown passes in Ryan Dinwiddie's system. So I'm not saying Kelly is entirely a product of his own system, but he ranked lower for me for that reason. But I only had three quarterbacks on my list because I thought those are the only three quarterbacks who are true top, again, I'll say 40 because the ballot is 40, talents in the CFL. I had Kolaris at 8. I had Vernon Adams Jr. at 19. And I had Chad Kelly at 39. And if the ballot had been 60, I don't think I would have had another quarterback on the list even then.
Let me throw this curveball at you guys real quick. If Trey Ford was going to be Edmonton's starter this season,
no.
Would you have had him on your list?
No.
No.
No. No. Not even close.
Okay.
No, he wouldn't have been in consideration for me. And
with all due respect to Trey.
We just need to see more, right? He was very exciting. If it was the most top 40 most exciting players on the list, I'd have Trey Ford and Chris Trevler on the list. That's not what the list is.
Yeah.
We need to see more.
Trey needs to be more consistent as a passer before he gets into that upper echelon. I had the same three quarterbacks on my ballot as Hodge. I ranked them slightly higher. But again, for me, there are only three elite proven guys in the league that you can count on going into this season. One of them, I think you can argue in Kelly, you can't count on right now because of the suspension and all the other stuff. That's why guys like Ryan Ballantyne didn't include him on their ballot at all. I understand those takes, although I think, look, we have a couple of BC Lions on this list, very deserving ones, and Keon Hatcher and TJ Lee. They're going to miss more time than Kelly is because they're both hurt. So if you're taking Kelly off his ballot because he's going to miss time, you also have to take guys like that off your ballot. I don't think it's necessarily fair to them because they are properly ranked in my mind based on their talent. But there is only three quarterbacks that I see as elite talents right now. That's Kolaris, that is Vernon Adams Jr., and that is Chad Kelly.
It should be noted the number of touchdowns that Trey Ford had last year, 12 passing, 3 rushing. That is 2 fewer than number 19 ranked Cody
Fajardo. That's what I'm saying.
Which is wild. So my argument is not that Trey Ford belongs because Cody Fajardo was on the list. My argument is Cody Fajardo does not belong on the list, but I've already made that clear. So I digress.
The Saskatchewan Roughriders and Ottawa Redblacks have unveiled new uniforms for the 2024 season. The Riders' obsidian green alternates feature dark colors and a new S logo on the helmets, while the Redblacks' retro-inspired home jerseys harken back to the days of the Roughriders. Do you give both looks a thumbs up or a thumbs down?
Thumbs way up for both of them. I'll start with the Riders first because I like the new age look that they have. The only thing is I thought about this more, and we kind of talked about this in our Free Down Nation WhatsApp group chat that gets lit up at times and is super intriguing and offers a bunch of different takes, is that, you know, I wish the numbers were kind of jumping off the uniform a little bit more, had some pop to them, maybe had some of that brighter green that is in that new S logo. But other than that, I think they are super sharp. I like the way that they sort of marketed this look as well, with the obsidian green being the darkest before it turns black, because a lot of people look at it and think that it's black. But when you understand that, I think Rider Nation likes that part of it. To flip to the Red Blacks, I love, love, love those uniforms. They should wear those home uniforms for darn near every game and come up with an away set with a white jersey, because those look super sharp. Guys, I'm going to ask you this question, and I know I'm maybe getting ahead of myself because I want to hear your takes on the jerseys as well. But have you ever seen a terrible looking football team from a uniform perspective win a championship? Because I don't think it happens. I'm not saying you need to be the swaggiest team out there or anything like that, but terrible jerseys do not equate in my weird analytics brain to championships.
I would dispute that if you look at the whole world of football beyond just the NFL and the CFL. I think there's been some...
Just pro league.
There's been some... I don't like any of the spring football league jerseys. I think they're atrocious.
No. We're not talking about that.
Well, then you're limiting the
NFL,
scope.
CFL, NCAA, even U Sports, University will include.
NCAA. Well, there has to be one, Duck. I think it's anecdotal. Although the Michigan Wolverines, I think, have an absolutely fantastic Sega jerseys if we're talking NCAA football, and they just
but this is what I'm talking daddy. About when you think of championship football teams.
Well, because you're thinking about iconic programs most of the time, right? Successful iconic programs mm-hmm. typically have iconic jerseys to go along with them, the types of jerseys that everyone is looking to aspire to, right? I think that's why there's that connection in your mind.
I think that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who recently won a Super Bowl, have pretty terrible jerseys. They need to go back to their creamsicle mm-hmm. look. I also think that the Philadelphia Eagles jerseys are pretty bad. They need to go back to the Kelly Blunts. Yeah, I think they're pretty bad. One thing working to your credit, though, Dunk, is that the Guelph Griffins and their awful logos and uniforms are possibly a good argument because Guelph's never won a Vanier Cup, of course.
No, that's not true. They won in 1984.
Oh, sorry. They won one back when cars ran on steam. Sorry, you're right. They won one yes. back in black
Guelph's
and white television.
Uniform set looks sharp. I'll say that.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. They might have won. I do think that there are some CFL looks where you kind of look back at old Grey Cup photos and it's like, oh, it's regrettable that that uniform was enshrined in Grey Cup history. One that comes to mind immediately for me like that is the 2007 Winnipeg Blue Bomber alternates that were gold helmet, gold jersey, blue pants. Those were rough. Those were gross. Maybe that's the reason the Bombers lost the game. I don't know, because
when you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Kerry Joseph played atrociously, and they still managed to lose. Granted, Ryan Dinwiddie, who's coming back into the conversation for a completely different reason, started his first career CFL game in the Grey Cup. But anyway, point is, I think that I think both, to answer the actual question, man, we got off topic. I think that both of these are good. I don't like the kind of late 90s, early 2000s trend of wearing black for no reason, mm-hmm. but that's not what the Riders are doing here. They're wearing a very dark color. I will say, massive pet peeve of mine is uniforms that are hard to read. And so I do have a major concern about that with the Riders jersey. I would have liked to see them with white numbers and maybe pop that bright green color as an outline to the numbers. That would have solved that problem. But fans seem to like it. I asked them on my Twitter feed. The vast majority of fans of Saskatchewan or otherwise seem to give them a big thumbs up. And I do think that the Red Blacks are a big thumbs up. I will say the Rough Riders back in the day wore super slick uniforms, and I like that Ottawa is embracing those. I don't know why they didn't just immediately do a modernized version of that when the Red Blacks came into the league in 2014. If you look at a team like Winnipeg, for instance, their look has gotten super slick since they just did a modernized version of their classic look. I think the best jerseys arguably in the CFL are the Riders throwbacks, which are just a slightly updated version of the Ron Lancaster era of the Riders. I think anytime you can go back to history and just give it a little modern twist, a little modern flair, that is a huge recipe for success. And it's nice to see the Red Blacks doing it with their home jersey. I hope they soon do it with their away uniform and even alternate uniform, because the Russ Jackson era, you Google pictures of Russ Jackson, those uniforms are slick. Those uniforms are Ottawa football. I know that those teams didn't always have a ton of success, but guess what? Neither have the Ottawa Red Blacks. So let's go back to history. Let's have some beautiful looks in the nation's capital. I like both of these.
I love the Riders jerseys, and I understand the criticism about the numbers and them not being legible from up on high, but that's for people like Dunk to worry about. I don't care about that. I'm just watching football, and I think it's a unique color that you don't see on the field, a unique look that is entirely theirs. That's the type of thing that a new uniform should have. As for the Red Blacks uniform, I'm typically a fan of retro uniforms. I'm a little bit lukewarm on this one. I don't love I don't love the trend of just focusing on black in all uniforms. I know it's fitting in this case because the old Rough Riders used to wear that. So I don't hate it. Don't get me wrong. It's not a bad uniform, but there's nothing about it truly that made me pop. It's just a little bit simple for my taste. Now, it should also be noted, there's going to be at least one more set of new uniforms announced later today after we've already recorded the podcast, with the Edmonton Elks putting out their own retro uniforms. I'm very excited to see what those look like, because I think Edmonton has one of those iconic classic looks we talked about. And if they can pay homage to that, that could be a truly special uniform. We've also heard some whispers, Tyson Philpott let slip in an interview with TSN that potentially there might be a new look coming at some point for the Montreal Alouettes. We don't know any details about that, but there's going to be some other new jerseys. We'll just have to see if they can live up to the standard that Saskatchewan has set.
That's well said. And let me paint this picture for you guys, okay? The new Red Blacks, I almost said Rough Riders, but I guess because that's they're harkening back. The new Red Blacks uniforms they should wear for every home game, because those current or red version of their home uniforms looks like a minor football jersey, right? Where it's like two colored.
Ouch.
There's a color on the shoulder. You got some color, a different color on the front panel or whatever you want to call it. Like the Red Blacks in those new black Rough Rider throwback uniforms look like a championship football team. The Red Blacks in those red and black home uniforms look like the Red Blacks of the last couple of years who struggle to win at home. So I'm just saying, but I'm not saying, if you look championship caliber, that gives you a better chance to hoist a trophy.
Dunk, I don't know what amateur football teams you're around that can afford two-colored jerseys. Come on. Like, there's so solo colored pennies here. We're not doing the two-colored jersey thing.
I'm going back to my Guelph Bears days. Now it's the Guelph Junior Griffins. But we had – I'll probably dig up a picture at some point. But blue on the shoulders and kind of down the side. But on the front was orange. I don't even know how that color scheme came into effect. Dude, I've been a part of some awful jersey schemes now that I think of it. But I think you need to have the one
that's why you didn't
color
play good.
Similar to what Hodge is talking about. Yeah, I mean, that's valid too.
No, and he was running around so much because he was trying to avoid his own jersey.
Trying to get away from the jersey. No, Dunk, you were a good player. All credit and fairness to you. But maybe you were overcoming the jerseys. If your theory is that if you look good, you play good. That's why you didn't go pro. That's why. It's the jerseys. I should say, last year, before the season started, we did rank all of the CFL's uniforms. And the red alternates to which you're referring, Dunk, placed 9th out of 24. So evidently you might be alone in your hatred of those jerseys. But I do think that the current home jerseys are the best that the Red Blacks have. I will also say, on a league wide, thought, I think it's nice when Ottawa's wearing lots of black, because with Montreal incorporating more red into their look and with the Calgary Stampeders really embracing red and white, I think it's nice to have a team that wears mostly black just to kind of spread things out. I remember growing up as a fan of the CFL when we had 8 teams and 3 of them were wearing navy. and thinking, even as like an 8-year-old, this is kind of dumb. We should probably not have almost half of our league all wearing navy blue. And fortunately, the Bombers no longer wear navy, and the Montreal Alouettes do still wear navy, but with more other colors in the mix. And the Toronto Argonauts now wear what I believe they call their Oxford blue, but most people call the baby blue or the sky blue or whatever you want to call it, the lighter blue color. So, I like these uniforms. I hope that the Edmonton Elks keep up this positive trend, because I do think that uniforms matter. They're slick. People love to talk about uniforms. I put zero thought into my own wardrobe, but I do think a lot about sports uniforms, admittedly.
We'll get you in some Lululemon here at some point in the future.
Well, hey, we'll have to wait and see. I own 15 copies of the same t-shirt. So if I find a shirt that I like at Lululemon, I will buy multiple of it.
Like a cartoon.
It's smart.
Character.
It's easy. You don't have to think about what you're going to wear, right? Just like Mark Zuckerberg.
If I find a shirt that I like, I will buy it in three or four, because I only really wear three or four different colors, and I will buy three or four shirts in each color, and that'll get me through the next like couple of years. If I find a pair of pants I like, I will buy four of them. I am like a cartoon character. I will wear the same thing in slightly different colors. There we go. I did that the other day. I bought two pairs of the exact same shoes. I like the shoes. I want to wear them. Two pairs. Something happens to one, I got the other.
Smart man, thinking ahead.
Some might also say I'm crazy, but that's okay. Hey, so I'll take smart if you want to use the word smart.
I bet you the Jonas Brothers, who have been selected to play the halftime show, wear more than just four colors like Hodge. Do you think the Joe Bros are a great pick?
Yes, and JC, you could take a little break here, because I'm going to talk for a while about the Jonas Brothers.
First off,
I just want to get this out of the way, and I don't think any of these people are listening to the podcast, because I think if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably a smart person. But there are people on Twitter every year, most of them being of a certain vintage, who seem surprised that the CFL is not hiring April Wine or Glass Tiger or Loverboy or any other once famous, now irrelevant Canadian band isn't playing the Grey Cup halftime show. And I just want to let those people know that there's this thing in marketing called being even remotely intelligent, where instead of booking an act that already appeals to your core audience, which we know, we talked about the CFL's demographics literally on last week's show. Instead of doing that, you book a different act that will bring in different people, because the goal when you're marketing something is to draw the widest possible audience. So overwhelmingly, the Jonas Brothers have a female millennial audience. I was at the Jonas Brothers concert in Toronto last summer at the Rogers Center. My wife is from Toronto. We were visiting her family and some friends. One of the nights we were all there, the Jonas Brothers were playing, and there were still tickets available in the very, very, very back row of the Rogers Center. And we went, and I was there. I would say comfortably it was 85% female, the audience. I got up to use the washroom late in the Jonas Brothers set, and not only was there no line, I thought I was in the wrong bathroom because it was empty, and it was a very eerie feeling. And it was then that I realized that, oh no, this is the men's washroom. I just might be the only man here. And if you are booking a Grey Cup halftime show, again, if you're a Canadian football fan, you're already watching the Grey Cup, because the Grey Cup is Canadian football, and you know what it is, and you're like, yeah, I'm watching that. The entire purpose of the halftime show is to get non-Canadian football fans in. So that's why we're not having April Wine or Van Morrison or Glass Tiger or any other act who might have had amazing music. I really like Van Morrison, but I don't think that a 78-year-old Van Morrison should be playing the halftime show, because we need some new blood in here. We need some new people. And the Jonas Brothers have sold over, I believe it's 20 million albums?
200. 20 million, yeah.
And they have literally billions of streams on a variety of streaming platforms. So this was a slam dunk for the CFL. I think that they are very intelligent for getting this out early. And that was something super interesting that came out of Randy Ambrosi's speaking to the media in Vancouver. Credit to you, JC, for being there on Monday, where he said, we have an article up down at 3downnation.com right now, about the CFL being committed to announcing these acts earlier, not only as a way to spur ticket sales, but because they want to ensure they don't have a situation like they obviously appeared to have had a couple of years ago, where they are left twisting in the wind. Their commitment is they want to have an act signed, sealed, and delivered by April 15th. So this was actually agreed to 6 weeks ago. It was only announced late to help spur ticket sales. And I think that that absolutely has happened. The Jonas Brothers have millions and millions and millions of followers all over social media, and they are pushing out the CFL and the Grey Cup as we speak, which I think will help BC Place sell out sooner. So kudos to the CFL. And if you are a CFL fan, especially one of a certain vintage, please, please, please stop tweeting about April Wine. Please, please, please. It deeply offends me. Please. Please. I beg of you. I beg of you. Please. Oh, and also, Rush broke up like 10 years ago. So please stop saying Rush. Neil, if you want Neil Peart to play drums, you're going to need a Ouija board and some black magic, because he has been gone a long time. Please stop suggesting Rush. Rest in peace, Neil Peart. Incredible person, incredible drummer. He's not playing Grey Cup. I'm sorry.
I'll be entirely frank. All of these acts that you have mentioned, Hodge, no idea who any of them are. No clue. This 27-year-old does not know who April Wine is to save his life. But you know what? I know who the Jonas Brothers are. They're not my favorite type of music, but they are extremely popular. And I should also add, I think a lot of people's perceptions of the Jonas Brothers was informed of their work a decade or more ago, when they were legitimate teeny pop. You've got the promise rings on the finger, you know, very clean cut, all of that. They are a different musical act now. They have a different type of music than they did when their demographic was 12-year-old girls. Those girls are now in their late 20s, early 30s. They like a different type of music. And while they still appeal to that demographic, you're not going to get teeny bops for the Grey Cup halftime show. I think this was a fantastic move by the CFL and by the BC Lions, for all the reasons you pointed out, Hodge, to bring people into the building. And I have a little experience with this, because the last Grey Cup I went to as a fan was in 2014, the last time it was here in Vancouver. And I got a chance to go to that game with my entire high school football team. Do you know why we got to go to that game, gentlemen? Because they gave us the tickets for free. They could not sell anything. They gave any minor football team that wanted to go free tickets the week before, because they could not pack that massive building. Amar Doman does not want that to happen for his first Grey Cup in Vancouver. He's seen the success with the kickoff concert series. He's seen what's happened by bringing in 50 Cent this year, where they may in fact sell out the stadium. They're over 50,000 tickets sold for that game already. They may max out capacity. And they're trying to do the same thing here for the Grey Cup game, and everyone's going to be better off for it. We need to attract more of a younger audience. We need to attract more of a female audience. And when we get those Jonas Brothers fans into the building, they're going to bring people with them. They're going to bring their boyfriends and their husbands and their wives and their girlfriends and their friends and their kids to watch this game. And maybe even if the Jonas Brothers fan does not end up being a CFL fan, maybe the person they bring with them becomes one or enjoys the experience, and they come back to a game next year. We saw the success this season with Taylor Swift just being around the NFL, not even performing. I think this is a little bit of a copycat move to try and get that same demographic, and it's absolutely genius by the CFL.
Can we just let Amar Doman book the CFL Grey Cup halftime shows for the foreseeable future? Because he seems to know what he's doing.
I think we should. And let's hope he continues to ignore the people who are like, well, we need acts who remind people of their youth, like the Guess Who or Lighthouse. Like, well, the way
I do time, know who the Guess Who is.
The way that time and JC did, I think, an exceptional job of explaining this phenomenon of time where people who were children 15 years ago are now adults. Because that's how time works. You get older with each passing year, I might add. So if there was an act that was popular with children 15 years ago and you're trying to get young adults invested in your league or your product, you should hire someone who was really popular 10 to 15 years ago. Because in fact, those children who were children are now young adults. And dare I say that 10 or 15 years from now, we could potentially even see the Grey Cup holding acts at halftime that are popular for kids right now. Because that, again, is how time works. We all get older every year. That happens.
Except for Dunk. He stays the same.
Except for Dunk. That's true. He stays the same.
There's some people out there that think you get crankier with age, but I think we all disagree with that, right, fellas?
I think that there are some people who are old and who are cranky who are probably just always cranky. That is probably true. I don't know, though, overall, if we get cranky or not. Tweet
just
at
one
us
note before,
if we get cranky.
Yeah, let us know.
Let us know.
But one note before we move on. You know, the Super Bowl, and I'm not comparing Grey Cup to Super Bowl, but has gone to the point now where they have a pregame act. So I wonder if the CFL is looking at that going, we want to get a big halftime act, but perhaps they're looking into getting bigger name pregame acts as well, like the Super Bowl is doing. I'm not saying that they should be compared or that they're in any way the same, but I'm just wondering if that conversation is happening behind the scenes, because we've seen the success of what Amar Doman has done. Who could have thought that I'm going to sell out the BC Lions home opener by getting 50 Cent and how much that could impact ticket sales with a great act for the halftime show for the Grey Cup? Perhaps, guys, it would be a great thing if they didn't have to give away those tickets to minor football teams in whatever city they're having the Grey Cup in, that they could actually have to go to the trouble of adding more and more temporary stands at some of these other stadiums around Canada.
Yeah, I think the pregame concert or a kickoff act like they do for the Super Bowl would be really intriguing. I think the thing that was clear in my conversation with Ambrosi on Monday was that this move to announce the halftime act earlier or sign them was preempted because there's been massive changes in the music industry, and it's really hard to sign those acts right now because they no longer have the incentive that they once did to perform at these big events for a reasonable fee, because it's going to spike your record sales with a bunch of new eyeballs on your product. People don't sell records anymore. So if you're not on tour selling tickets, you're not making money. So it's not the same proposition for these acts as it once was. If you're going to sign a kickoff act, you've got to get it early, just like they did with the halftime show act here.
Well, one group that's available for the pregame show at Grey Cup is April Wine. Let's make it happen.
Who is April Wine?
They were one of the most popular Canadian bands of the
1970s. It's a band? It's not a person?
Correct.
I thought it was just one woman.
No. And I believe it's a group of men.
This is
you can make everyone happy. Pre-game, halftime, post-game, sign them all.
CFL teams.
CFL, over to you.
Have made their final roster cuts for the 2024 regular season with players such as BC defensive back Marcus Sales, Calgary strong side linebacker Titus Wall, Saskatchewan QB Mason Fine, Montreal receiver Tevin Jones, Hamilton defensive end Mason Bennett, Edmonton linebacker Tony Jones, Toronto defensive back Tavares McFadden, all being released. JC, who was the biggest surprise of cutdown day for you?
I think all of these guys were a surprise, but Sales was the largest one in my mind. This is a guy who is a former CFL All-Star who's among the highest paid DBs in the league. That's probably part of the reason why you move on from him, is to save a few bucks when you're up against the cap. I know the BC Lions are extremely high on the young players they've got in their secondary. It's likely that they're going to start two rookies for the season opener in cornerback Jordan Perryman and halfback Ronald Kent Jr., who is going to replace Sales. But this was still a big surprise for a guy who's been very good for that franchise for the last number of years and is highly touted around the league. Of course, almost instantly signs in Saskatchewan, and I'm sure is going to make an impact for them. The other guy I was shocked by is Tevin Jones out in Montreal. Big free agent signing for a team that maybe doesn't have that big-time outside threat at receiver. I thought he was going to step in seamlessly for them. He gets cut as a 31-year-old because Charleston Rambo comes in and has a hell of a preseason, looks like an absolute stud, and will earn that starting role in week one, much as Austin Mack did. I thought those two moves were the most surprising, but also intriguing for the potential they give to the players behind them.
I don't think there was anything really surprising here, to be quite honest, outside of Marcus Sales. And the reason I say that is because Sales said that he had multiple teams hit him up right away after he was released and got to kind of decide where he was going to go next based on where he felt like he could win, and ultimately chose to sign with the Riders. I think they got a steal to be able to get him. The Lions might not feel the same way, but I still think he's at an age where he can get back to that CFL All-Star level in some form or fashion. And if you're Corey Mace, defensive coordinator, sitting out there and this guy gets released and you can bring him in there, even just to add depth to the secondary until he learns the system and potentially gets a starting spot, that's a great value add. Amari Henderson missed a bunch of camp with a lower body injury and has to prove that he can stay healthy. And we know Marcus Sales has experience at that halfback spot. So I think this is a easy addition for the Riders. But, you know, the other guys on this list don't necessarily surprise me. I think Tony Jones seemed like he was a guy on the upswing with Chris Jones, but you can never get a real read with him. McFadden has been around for a while and signed, I think it was with Toronto late last season. You know, Titus Wall, I would say, might be the other guy that was a slight surprise, but they have so much going on in the secondary there in Calgary that somebody had to be the odd man out.
To me, Sales and McFadden were both big surprises because of extenuating circumstances at their position, right? We know TJ Lee might not play at all this season. He has manned one of the halfback spots in BC for a decade, so one would think they'd want their other halfback to be locked and loaded. That wasn't the case. Same thing with Tarveris McFadden. Jamal Peters, one of Toronto's starting corners from last season, is now in Hamilton. The other, Quantez Stiggers, is now with the New York Jets. So you'd think, oh, great. At least we've got Tarveris to lock down one of those spots, and we'll find somebody else to lock down the other. So those both surprised me. The other one that I will say really surprised me was Titus Wall in Calgary. I know that he had trouble staying healthy, but I thought that Titus Wall was right up there with the best strong side linebackers in the CFL when healthy. He's only played 21 career CFL games, but in those 21 career CFL games, 105 total tackles, 4 sacks, 3 picks, 2 forced fumbles. Like, the Stampeders are on the record talk about how they want more turnovers in 2024. Well, this guy, as a rookie in 2022, only 5 games, had 5. Like, that is sensational. And he is that's not a position everybody can play. It's 6 foot, 200 pounds. He is somebody who can. So I know that the Stampeders have Brandon Dozier there, who's played plenty of strong side linebacker. Obviously they didn't feel they need him, but I thought with Titus Wall, especially if he is fully healthy, which I believe he is by all accounts, all reports, that was a surprise. That being said, there were no mega jaw-dropping crazy surprises, at least for me. I didn't think Mason Fine would get outright cut by the Riders, but I do think, especially given the conversation that JC and I had last week on the show, I do think that Shea Patterson was the right choice for the backup spot, and I appreciate the Riders' willingness to go young with Jack Cohn as their third stringer.
The Montreal Alouettes visit the Winnipeg Blue Bombers on Thursday night for a rematch of the 2023 Grey Cup. The Owls debut a new-look defensive line featuring Canadians Derek Wiggin, Isaac Adeyemi-Berglund, and American Dylan Wynn alongside Sean Lemon, while the Bombers turn to Eric Lofton and Celestin Hubba to replace right tackle Jamarcus Hardrick and defensive end Jackson Jeffcoat. The Peg are currently favored by 6.5 points. I think this line, Hodge, is right around that Grey Cup line. I believe it was 6.5 or 7. But is that too many points, once again, for the Bombers to try and cover?
It's not. And the reason for that is quite simple, that this game is taking place in the Peg. According to Wikipedia, by the way, last year's line for the Grey Cup was 7.5. So this is just shy of that. Winnipeg, dating back to 2019, is 31-3 at home, which is maybe the best four-year stretch in CFL history for a home team. I should ask Steve Daniel for confirmation. If it's not the best, it is certainly right up there. This Winnipeg team, there's no denying, has lost talent. As discussed on the show last week, I don't have this team winning 14 games again. I've got them winning 12. That being said, I think that this is a motivated group. I think this is a group that will come out angry, that will come out firing after losing a game that, by all accounts, they thought they were going to win in last year's Grey Cup. No disrespect to the Alouettes. I think they've done a very nice job of keeping together their Grey Cup roster. But with Winnipeg's defensive line locked and loaded, they've got a ton of new talent there. They're dressing a ton of defensive linemen for this game. I think they're going to be able to get after Cody Fajardo. And offensively, you know, Brady Oliveira, who was quote-unquote hurt for all of training camp, has made a miraculous recovery and appears 100% ready to roll for game one. So to me, this I don't think this game will be particularly close. I wouldn't necessarily put money on the Bombers at over a touchdown, but if you're getting them at under 7 points, I think this is a no-brainer. You take Winnipeg to win and cover. The Bombers absolutely killed the Tiger Cats in their home opener last season. I think that this could be a repeat performance for Winnipeg.
Yeah, I see this exactly the same way as you do, Hodge. This is going to be a fired-up Bombers team that's looking to avenge last year's defeat, and they get a chance to do it, not on the road, but in their own home stadium, which I believe right now is the hardest place to play in the entire CFL. That bodes very well for this team, even if they've got a few new faces in new places. I also think we're just overvaluing the Montreal Alouettes a little bit right now because they're coming off that fantastic finish to last season and that Grey Cup victory. This is still a team that isn't going to blow you away offensively. They're going to control the ball. They're not going to commit many mistakes, and their defense is going to be exceptional, but they're not necessarily an explosive, dominant team that's going to come out and win 14 games. That wasn't the team they were last year. It's not going to be the team they are this year. They are going to be 10 wins, middle of the pack, top of the East type of deal, and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, I believe, are still better than that. I'm taking Winnipeg and all the points.
Bo Levi Mitchell makes his long-anticipated return to Calgary on Fridays. The Ticats visit the Stampeders at McMahon Stadium. Mitchell did not play in the only game between the two teams last season and is excited to face his former franchise, though he said he holds no ill will against the Stamps. Hamilton is a short road favorite in this one at around 1.5 points. Ch-ch-ch-cheese! Can the Ticats win and cover?
Do I have to pick someone for this game? Because I think they both should lose. I am not a believer in either of these franchises right now, and I don't think the margin between them is very large either. Frankly, I think they're going to be battling for the bottom playoff spot in their divisions if they're in playoff contention at all. And I don't believe in Bo Levi Mitchell having an Anthony Calvillo-like resurgence like Scott Milanovic thinks. But for this one game, I do believe that Bo Levi Mitchell can find a little motivation. And that's going to be just enough in his return to Calgary to cover this short spread. I do believe the Ticats can win on the road.
I am going to be taking the home side here. I've got the Calgary Stampeders, and the reason for that is if there's one thing the Stampeders did really well in 2022 that they need to get back to after a disappointing 2023, it's running the damn ball, right? BJ Emmons had a very good preseason. Peyton Logan was, I think, is one of the most explosive players in the CFL with the ball in his hands. And Dedrick Mills, I think, is solid. Hamilton has a lot of questions in their linebacking core, right? Gone, of course, is Simone Lawrence, who retired. Also, they have some more questions since the retirement of Jordan Williams. I think that that unit could be potentially susceptible to the run. And this is not going to be a high-scoring game, right? I don't see this as a big, flashy, high-scoring game. I see this as a bit of a slugfest. And at the end of the day, I trust Calgary's secondary a little bit more than I do Hamilton's. The Stampeders spent a lot of money in their secondary this past offseason with getting DeMario Houston in there. They've completely revamped that unit. I will take the Stampeders, though. Again, I think this is going to be a very tight game.
The Saskatchewan Roughriders and Edmonton Elks match up on Saturday at Commonwealth Stadium with the green and gold around 2.5-point favorites, depending on your sports book. Despite winning only two home games last season, fellas, at least they stopped that dreaded long home losing streak. Trevor Harris makes his much-anticipated return from a tibial plateau fracture for the Riders, while McLeod Bethel Thompson, the law firm, makes his debut for the Elks. Hodge, who you got?
I've got the Saskatchewan Roughriders against the spread. I would love to get at least a field goal, but if it stays at 2.5, I'll still take the points because, frankly, I think this game is a coin flip. I do think that McLeod Bethel Thompson will get Edmonton out of the basement in the West Division. I've got the Elks at 7 wins this season. I do think they could win more than that. One thing I will say, though, is I do think that the Riders are overvalued right now, which is why I'm taking Edmonton straight up. Even if they just sneak this win by a rouge, by a safety, whatever. I have seen, and I was taken aback, frankly, in our predictions article that we did for all of our contributors at Three Down Nation. Please look that up on the site. People talking about Corey Mace completely turning the Riders around. I just want to give a sobering reminder that Corey Mace has coached 0 games in the CFL as a head coach, and also remind people that Craig Dickinson led Saskatchewan to a 3-1 start last year and a 4-1 start in 2022. Now, do I think the Riders are better than last year? Absolutely. Do I think Corey Mace is going to be a good head coach? Absolutely. But I need to see it to believe it. And there is recent precedent for the Riders starting hot and then collapsing. So I don't want to see anybody planning the victory parade. If the Riders do in fact win, they literally beat Edmonton at Commonwealth Stadium in week one last year. Let's temper our expectations. I know that's hard to ask of Rider fans, especially after a couple of tricky seasons, but let's not plan the parade. Let's just go in here and see what we got. Let's go in. So I will take Edmonton straight up, but against the spread, I may as well take a couple of points with the Riders.
Let's quickly recap what you just said there, Hodge. Saskatchewan has started both of the last two seasons hot. They beat Edmonton on the road last year in the season opener. Oh, and they're better than they were last year? This isn't a coin flip. If it is, the coin's weighted. Come on. The Saskatchewan Roughriders are going to go into Commonwealth and win this game. I love that the Elks have McLeod Bethel Thompson. Sure, they'll be better on offense as long as he can stay upright. But that defense is a bunch of nobodies right now. I don't trust them at all, and I certainly like the additions that the Saskatchewan Roughriders have made. I think AJ Ouellette is going to absolutely ram it down their throats in this game. Trevor Harris may not take a hit the entire evening. I'm taking the Riders no matter what the line is.
JC coming strong. So you're saying take the Riders alternate spread. Get some of that cash, value, baby.
While you're fired up, JC, just for the record, it's Olet, not Oulet.
He's mispronouncing his own last name, historically speaking. But
you're allowed to pronounce your last name however you want, and it's Olet.
The BC Lions visit the Toronto Argonauts on Sunday, where the Leos are 5.5-point road favorites, potentially, due to the fact Chad Kelly has been suspended for at least the first half of the season, pending a potential appeal. Vernon Adams Jr. was Three Down Nation's consensus MOP pick this year. I can't understand it, but I guess it is. And aims to get off to a hot start despite not having Keon Hatcher in the lineup due to an Achilles injury. Cameron Dukes gets the start for the double blue. JC, can the Boatmen overcome a wide spread?
Look, I can't in good conscience pick the Toronto Argonauts for this game simply because Cameron Dukes is at quarterback. I think this is an incredibly talented Toronto team right now, but that is a huge question mark going up against a pretty good BC Lions squad in a game that matters. It's not a game where you've already secured your playoff spot like he played in a lot last year. I do not yet trust Cameron Dukes. I hope he proves me wrong, but I do think the Argos can cover here because I have a lot of questions about the BC Lions that need to be answered. That receiving core is going to look different with Travis Fulham and Aiden Eberhardt starting in there. We don't know what those guys will look like. They drew rave reviews from the coaching staff in training camp, but we need to see them on the field. And we also don't know about that secondary, where there's going to be two new rookie starters as well. I think the Argos, with all the talent they have around Dukes, can threaten the cover, but I'm still taking the Lions straight up because Vernon Adams Jr. is a legit elite quarterback, and you always take the better quarterback in these matchups.
I think that the Toronto Argonauts are going to be better than a lot of people suspect, and that is because they have the best offensive line in the CFL. I also think with the addition of Jake Ceresna, they quite possibly have the best defensive line in the CFL. And if games are won in the trenches, then I think they're going to win a lot of games based on that alone. That being said, I think I would be a hypocrite if I chose Vernon Adams Jr. to be the MOP of the CFL, the BC Lions to win the Grey Cup, both of which I've done this season, by the way, and not pick them to win and cover in week one. So,
Hodge, what are you smoking out in Winnipeg?
I'm smoking a lot less than they do out in Vancouver. But I think that the Lions can go into BMO, which, by the way, after all the fans showed up and then left horribly disappointed in the East Final, I don't think is going to be packed. I don't think will be a raucous atmosphere. I think that the Lions can go in there and win by a touchdown. At some point, we're going to see Cameron Dukes make a mistake. This is a guy who has started two CFL games in his career. Yes, I think that Ryan Dinwiddie's system is great, and I think it's quarterback friendly. Yes, this team has a lot of talent still, but I think that the Lions are going to win this one. Again, I still think the Argos are a playoff team. I think they'll win more games than a lot of people expect, but this is a really tough matchup to start the season. The Lions are on a mission. I have them winning this game and covering, not blowing the Argos out. I'm not saying this is going to be a 25-point victory, but I think they can cover 5.5 points.
Hodge, man, you are eating.
Yes, I am.
A bunch of points in week one. I know you like eating.
He's a hungry man.
There are some big spreads that you have no problem giving in week one. And I'll just say for the record, I believe there is value on the Argos plus the points on the spread, and also the money line as underdogs. You noted it, Hodge. I thought you were going to pick the Argos in this game. They have the best offensive line in the league. I don't think that's up for a debate. Arguably, there's the potential there for them to have the best defensive line in the league. So I think the Argonauts are being undervalued in this spot. I would think long and hard about taking them on the money line.
I will also say, historically, you can make good money in the CFL betting underdogs to start the year while the odds makers are kind of feeling these things out. I am going completely against that trend, picking the Bombers and Lions because I think there's some extenuating factors at play. But by all means, if you want to take the big underdogs in week one, historically speaking, I believe that has boded well for people. It's now time for Hodges' Heritage Moment. On this day in 2020, Chris Cuthbert left TSN for Sportsnet. The native of Brampton, Ontario, joined TSN in June of 2005 as a play-by-play announcer for the CFL on TSN and the network's NHL coverage. He called 16 Grey Cups while at TSN, the last being the Winnipeg Blue Bombers' triumph over the Hamilton Tiger Cats in 2019. He has since called the Stanley Cup Finals and will presumably do so again with the Edmonton Oilers winning the Western Conference this year. Dunk, what do you remember about Chris Cuthbert calling games for the CFL?
You know what always stands out to me about Cuthbert is the notebook that he would walk around with. And yes, he's old school. I got nothing against that. That would be filled with nuggets that he would gather throughout the week. He would be there for all of the media availabilities, wouldn't miss that, would be at practice. And then, of course, you know, what some people might not know is behind the scenes of production meetings that go on. And that booklet, you know, especially for Grey Cup, was chock full of all kinds of stuff, you know, a lot of which might not end up getting used. But as a lot of the great broadcasters do, they operate under the assumption that you have to be ready for even that last guy on the roster to make a critical play at a critical time in the game to have a note or a nugget on them, because that's part of pro preparation. So if you're going to have a guy like Abiento, you know, make an interception or a game-changing play, you got to have something ready on that guy or something interesting to link him to. So that always stood out about me, how studious he was and the notes that he took. Everybody has their own process, but so much respect for how he went about his business covering the CFL and any other sport that he's touched. Of course, a lot of that has been in the NHL.
Now, there's not really a moment that sticks out to me in my mind about Chris Cuthbert, but if I close my eyes and I pretend that I'm 10 years old again and watching a CFL game with my dad in the living room with my Edmonton jersey on, the voice I hear is Chris Cuthbert's. And for the rest of my life, that's what I will always hear when I think of football and the CFL especially, is his voice. He represents my childhood as much as anybody, and I deeply miss the fact that we don't get to hear him call football games anymore. When I tune into the Stanley Cup Finals, or on the rare occasion when I do watch hockey during the rest of the year, and I hear Chris Cuthbert's voice, it is like a kick in the gut of nostalgia, even on the ice instead of the gridiron.
And no disrespect to anybody who has done color commentary, play-by-play for the CFL on TSN, CBC before that, anybody. The best I've ever heard is Chris Cuthbert, and it's not particularly close. He does world-class work, and on the one hand, it sucks he's gone. On the other hand, isn't it wonderful that we got to hear 16 Grey Cups from Chris Cuthbert?
Let's go to the three-minute drill. The Calgary Stampeders have created a new premium viewing area at McMahon Stadium, most of which is standing room only. Is that a smart move?
It is, and I want to say this. A lot of executives, a lot of politicians do a lot of talking and not very much doing. Jay McNeil, president of the team, brand new president of the team, did a one-on-one with me back in November, said, we're going to put in a new standing room viewing area. And guess what? 6 months later, it's ready to go. Shout out executives and politicians who do stuff and don't just talk about it. Well done, Mr. McNeil. The BC Lions have sold over 50,000 tickets for their home opener as fans are excited to watch 50 Cent's performance. JC, are you surprised the crowd will be so big? And have you listened to any of 50's music since our show last week?
I was expecting a big crowd like the last couple years. I was not expecting a potential sellout of over 50,000. I am absolutely thrilled that we're going to see it, though. I am so excited. Not excited enough to listen to 50 Cent, though. Not my jam. I'll look at his discography so I can make some puns in my articles, but I'm not going to be listening to the tracks. The Riders have chosen Shea Patterson as their backup quarterback and cut 3-year veteran Mason Fine. Was that the right choice, Dunk?
It was. Fine, by all accounts, is a total pro and seems to be a great person as well. But this became very clear. And as much as Corey Mace said that it was a heavy competition, you could tell by the reps in training camp and the way that Shea Patterson was playing that everything was leaning that way. Really intrigued to see how Patterson grows and develops in this role and his potential in the future to be QB1 in the CFL. Obviously, Trevor Harris is in front of him, but this is a guy that played at the Big House in Michigan in front of over 100,000 fans. So he's been in pressure-packed situations. Playing in Ryderville will not be any different than anything he's experienced, so I think he could be ready for it. Hodge, the Blue Bombers cut Chris Smith, even though he returned to punt 109 yards for a touchdown during the preseason. What happened?
Well, it was interesting because Smith talked to the media after the game and was smiling ear to ear, looked great. But apparently, he is injured. I don't know if the injury happened during the game and just took a while to flare up, or if it happened the day after the game, but he is not healthy. I do believe there is a chance he could return, however, to the Bombers during the regular season. Malik Henry will miss the entire 2024 season for the Stampeders after suffering a ruptured patella tendon, torn ACL, and torn meniscus during the late stages of training camp. The injury came as the former 1,000-yard receiver was working back from an Achilles injury he suffered last year. Cheese, this guy just can't catch a break.
It's absolutely devastating for Malik Henry and devastating for all of us who wanted to watch him play. This is a guy who in 2022 looked absolutely explosive as a breakout star in that receiving corps. It should be noted, was not a guy who came in with a illustrious college resume. He was a guy at West Georgia, very small school, who only had a couple hundred yards receiving, never got into that all-conference type of conversation, but found his rhythm once he became a pro and was maximized in that 1 year. I was excited for his future. Now, unfortunately, we don't know if he'll ever get back to the player he once was. Dunk, you asked PGA Tour pro Mackenzie Hughes about attending Hamilton Tiger Cats games growing up during the Canadian Open. Was he a legit CFL fan?
It sounds like he was when he was a kid because he knows the Oski Wee Wee chant, but he admitted that with three kids of his own now and trying to follow the Toronto Maple Leafs in some form or fashion, he actually has a Maple Leafs logo on his little yardage booklet that he keeps in his back pocket there. It's difficult to keep up with the Tiger Cats, and for the uninitiated, Hughes is from Dundas, Ontario, which is just outside of Hamilton. But he says his parents and his family help him keep tabs on the team, and as the season goes along, if they're good, it seems like he'll at least know what's going on with the team, if not check out their games on the TV. The Edmonton Elks have announced over $2 million in upgrades to Commonwealth Stadium, including a new family space, upgraded washrooms, and new point-of-sale equipment. Is that a big deal?
I think it is, but this is the part of the press release that really stood out to me. Heather Suter, I hope I'm saying her name correctly, she's the director of Commonwealth Stadium. Presumably she is a City of Edmonton employee since Edmonton owns the facility. This is part of the quote, because these upgrades were paid for in partnership between the Elks and the city. This is the quote. While these stadium improvements will enhance fan engagement and visitor experience at the stadium, the city is hopeful that the province may make larger investments in the stadium infrastructure to ensure modernization efforts can continue to move forward as the economic impacts of major events continue to grow in our city. Close quote. To me, that is the polite, professional way of saying, screw you, provincial government. You're not giving us any money, and we are sick and tired of it. Get off your pocketbook. This building's 50 years old, and it's all we got. So that was the quote that stood out to me. Maybe we'll see the Alberta government step up in the future to help with the refurbishment of Commonwealth Stadium. Or maybe just build a new one. That could probably, you know, be a good idea. The Hamilton Tiger Cats have signed former West Division All-Star defensive back Jonathan Moxie. Is that a good move for the Tabbies?
Yeah, I think it's a fantastic move for the Tabbies. I was shocked to see Moxie released before the start of training camp. And the Ticats have some great players in their secondary with Jamal Peters and Richard Langer and Stavros Katsantonis. But Dexter Lawson Jr. and Kenneth George Jr. at the two halfback spots, those are some question marks for me. So getting Moxie in the building, potentially getting him into that starting lineup, I think is a big upgrade there. The CFL moved up the start of Saturday's regular season game between the Riders and Elks to avoid conflict with Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final, which will feature the Edmonton Oilers. Was that the right decision?
It absolutely was. Full credit to the CFL, the Rough Riders, and the Elks for getting this done, because it helps them in two ways. The TV viewership should go up because there's no overlap with that Game 1 between the Oilers and Florida Panthers in the Stanley Cup Final. And from an attendance perspective at Commonwealth Stadium, it allows fans who are following both teams in Edmonton and some of the Oilers fans who might also be counting themselves among Rider Nation to take in both games, enjoy them both. Very smart. And I like how everybody collaborated. Imagine that in the CFL to get it done.
We thank you, as always, for listening to the Three Down Nation podcast. We will be back next week for another episode. Enjoy week one. And if you want to know the winners of the games, just rewind the podcast and listen to my picks. Ignore JC's. Just listen to
play it back next week to tell Hodge he's wrong. That's at John D. Hodge on X.
If any of my picks are wrong, the games were rigged. They're just rigged. If my picks are right, then they were legitimate, well-played, fair games. That's how it works.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.